Hello and welcome to July's interview edition of the Organic Gardening Podcast. I'm Fiona Taylor, and this month I'm talking to horticulturalist, TV producer and garden consultant Kate Turner. Kate has worked behind the scenes on BBC's Garden Rescue, ITV's Love Your Garden and BBC Gardeners World. She's also been the head gardener at Charterhouse School and worked closely with the Therapy Garden, a thriving horticultural centre in Surrey. Kate also helped to bring together an Army Wives gardening club, which went from strength to strength, and they went on to create a medal-winning garden at the RHS Hampton Court Flower Show. Kate visited us in the spring at Garden Organics HQ in Wrighton, just outside Coventry, and as she and I walked round our garden, I asked Kate how her gardening journey began. It's a lovely sunny afternoon here at Wrighton Organic Gardens, and I've been joined by Kate Turner. Kate, welcome to Wrighton. It's brilliant to have you here. What a lovely afternoon we've got.
Oh, goodness me. Thank you, Fiona. I'm so pleased to be here, and what a glorious day. And I've not been here before, and I'm just so excited that I'm here today. It's just looking beautiful.
Thank you very much. Well, we're standing by the National Comfrey Collection here, which we hold, one of three collections that we hold. So that's a good place to start. I mean, are you an organic gardener?
I am definitely an organic gardener. Since I started about 25 years ago, I kind of wanted to know more. I knew I didn't want to use any pesticides. And I just started composting. That was my first thing, home composting. First year I tried it, we had a lot of rats. So I kind of thought I need to look into this a bit more. I have worked, the first big garden I was head gardener of, they weren't organic because it was a massive school. So it was all sports fields and it was just spray, spray, spray everything. And that really made me think, no,
this is the way.
Scorched earth policy is not the way for me. So I tried with the gardens to be as organic as possible, but it was very hard when, you know, each garden kind of opened up onto a sports field. But I knew for me, that's the way I wanted to go, definitely.
Well, opposite the Comfrey Collection are our compost bins. We probably ought to just dispel the rat rumour straight away. How did you deal with that? And yeah, how did it come about?
Well, to be fair, I was living in a kind of a tight property within a public park, almost next door to the cafe. So I think whatever I did, there were going to be rats in that area. But I did the classic thing of just not laying it properly, not putting enough brown in. And also I think my partner at the time was putting in cheese and things like that, you know, and I kind of find that out a bit later. Okay. So it was just really stripping it back again, letting it breathe a lot, having a separate, had a go with Bokashi for all the kitchen waste. Now the council takes all the food waste, so that's really good. But it was just learning. And once you learn and get enough airflow and not get it too wet, it's absolutely fine. But I think the main thing is just don't put any food, kitchen food, on your compost.
It's only raw peelings, isn't it?
Yeah, so cauliflower leaves and onions, potato peelings, anything like that. I mean, you're probably going to get mice, but mice will go absolutely anywhere, and I love mice anyway. Also the odd slow worm usually get, and maybe even a grass snake, but who doesn't love those?
Yeah, I've never had a slow worm in my compost, and it's a bit of an ambition actually of mine, I have to say. I think they are absolutely extraordinary, aren't they?
But a grass snake can give you a bit of a scare though if you don't know it's there. They move quickly.
Yeah, we're walking through now into the food growing area,
right?
Here at Wrighton. Tell me what got you into it in the first place.
Do you know what? It's not like so many people, you know. I used to follow my granddad around his allotment, or my mum would grow flowers for the garden. My parents had a lovely garden, but never that interested. Neither was I. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be a circus performer. But long story short, got into my 20s, wasn't happy with life, moved to Scotland, got into a bit of rhododendron bashing, things like that. Just got outside, which I'd never done before, really. And I was told I couldn't have children. And that kind of knocked me back. And so I decided, well, I'm going to have a go at growing. If I can't grow children, I'll grow plants. And literally, I got a job as a park keeper in Brighton, just to kind of decide where I was going to go next, and fell in love with it, became a head gardener, worked on Gardener's World, and then started up a community garden, worked on Garden Rescue. So I've done a bit of everything, really varied career, but that's how it started, that kind of need to nurture and grow. But I do have a son, a 21-year-old now, so that was a came out of the blue.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Power of gardening.
In your career, you said you've done quite a bit of behind-the-scenes telework. So tell us a bit about that. That sounds fun.
Well, do you know what? It was one of those things. When I had my son, I realised that when he was about three, it was... when he was about three, he didn't need me anymore too much. So there was a job going for a horticultural runner for Gardener's World. And I'd done a bit of TV work in my previous life. And I kind of knew that actually being a runner meant making a really good cup of tea and looking after the presenters. So I got the job. And just from then on, I kind of did a few more bits. And one of my jobs was project manager for a wildlife special for Love Your Garden with Alan Titchmarsh on ITV. And then with the same production company, I was project manager for a new series that was starring Charlie Dimmock, a bit of a comeback for her, so called Garden Rescue. And actually, that's been 10 years that we did that first series, and it's still going. And I can't believe it, because it was a real low budget kind of afternoon thing, and it's become so popular. Yeah. So that, you know, I feel quite proud of that. Behind the scenes is quite stressful. You have very little time. So when, you know, we say we've got 2 days to build this garden, that is all we've got. And usually we've only got the presenters for one day. We have to do a lot of the prep before they come. So that rushing around, it's not fake.
Yeah,
it's real. It's real.
I mean, there's a lot of inspiration that can be derived from, you know, makeover shows, isn't there? And I think that's definitely would fall into that category. And I I'm very much the ground force generation. You know, I thought, oh, gardening is possible. You know, I can in a weekend make a difference in my garden. But I think now, once people have kind of got the bug, we kind of need to slow it down, don't we?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, there is with the makeover shows, it is all instant, because that's the money shot. That's kind of what people want to see. They want to see those gardens suddenly, you know, they want to see the big mature trees planted. But you and I know that gardening needs to be slow. You know, I remember we were planting fully grown trees in May. Now, unless those homeowners were going to religiously be watering gallons and gallons of water, I know those trees didn't really stand a chance, you know. So for me, let's plant a bare root native hedge and watch it grow slowly. You know, that's what I like to do. But it's sowing those seeds early on, isn't it? Getting people interested in gardening and seeing what they can do, and then hopefully build from there. But I would love there to be a show that is a bit more slow gardening as well, you know, to counteract some of these instant quick fixes that we see on telly. And I know I'm part of that, but it certainly is good for garden centres. So to me, that's good for gardening. We can get people out there. And I think the shows are now, you see a lot more biodiversity, in especially within Garden Rescue. You know, we're always building mini beast houses and talking about bare root. And I think Ara Anderson was a presenter for one of the series or a few of the series. And I know she's all very much about biodiversity. So I think they're going the right way. But yeah, we need to slow it down, but it's not what people want to see.
In terms of your own garden knowledge, I mean, you know, you're well qualified, hugely well qualified, hugely experienced. How do you go about sharing that? And what do you think, where do you think the gaps are, you know, in knowledge generally amongst the population?
I think it's back to basics. It really is. I think you watch... you know, a garden makeover show, and you think, oh, I'm going to do that. And you go out and you don't think about what soil you've got. You don't think about what that plant needs. You just think that looks nice. So I think it is stripping it back to basics. And for me, that always starts with the soil. And I know it's not the sexiest thing, but we must be able to find a way to make it sexy, is soil. It's all that foundation of soil and just the basics. I've recently started doing series on Instagram about seed sowing, and the questions people ask me, it really shows you that that knowledge isn't there of how things grow, and people don't know what germination means. So I think us gardeners who've got that knowledge, although you never stop learning, goodness me, need to strip it back a bit and maybe not be so snobby about it and just be a bit more educational and take it slower. But for me, it all starts from the soil.
Okay, so let's talk about the soil then, because I couldn't agree more. You know, if you've perhaps just recently moved into a house, and you don't know anything about the soil, how do you go about sort of, you know, establishing a bit of a baseline?
That's quite a tough one, because it, you know, so many people are, like we've talked before, buying new build houses, and those new build houses are usually, the lawns are just hiding rubble and compacted soil. So often that's really, really bad. But what you want to do is test it. The RHS website has some great information. Your website has some great information about what to do with your soil. Test it. Find out what sort of soil it is for. Is first. Is it clay? Is it sandy loam, if you're very lucky? Really get to find out about what your soil is. Is it acidic? Is it alkaline? The more you know about the soil, then the more success you're going to have. And then once you know, then you just have to mulch. You have to mulch to get your soil good. But if you've moved into a new build, you are going to struggle. So I would suggest raised beds are always a good way to start, especially if you want to grow food.
I can see why you'd recommend raised beds, but that in a way is a bit instant again, isn't it? And I'm just wondering if there are other ways to nurture your soil, you know, perhaps take a year nurturing your soil. If you had the luxury of a year to get it ready and right, what methods would you adopt?
Well, you can go for the mulching. You can also go for sowing green manures, which is a really good way. But again, that's something we talk about. We throw out there as if people know what on earth we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it just basically means you're sowing a cover crop, a crop that is going to be putting goodness back into that soil and also breaking up that soil. So I'm sure you use lots of different types of green manures, because actually leaving a soil, even once you've mulched it, if you leave it bare over winter, then you're opening it out to the elements, so all that goodness can be leached away as well. So covering that soil with something that you don't let flower, you stop it flowering, and then you just dig it back into the soil. And it's such a good thing to do, and not many people do it. You know, it's something we all know about, but at the moment no dig seems to be the thing to do. But actually, I do think green manure is a really good thing to do, because you're not bunging a load of cardboard.
Yeah, and you can also do it all as you go along as well. So if you're sowing some of your vegetable crops, and you know you've got some space in between or underneath, then you can use those spaces with a bit of a cover crop. I sowed amaranth actually in amongst the wigwams of my broad beans. So instead of that circle in the middle of your wigwam not having anything to do, you know, the amaranth was perfectly happy. And it meant that soil was completely covered.
If you're kind of a bit confused about that, I would always recommend growing potatoes, especially if you've got a really hard kind of clay type of soil, because potatoes are brilliant for breaking up soil as well. So, you know, you don't just, if you're desperate to get something in there, have a go at potatoes, have a go at radishes, keep that soil covered. But do put your mulch down as well, if you're not just green manuring. But have a go at green manuring. Have a look at the website, the Garden Organic website, and I'm sure there's just loads of information.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about mulch, though, because I think that is something that, again, is another one of those words. What do you use? Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, so mulch is literally, it's just a way of adding, I prefer an organic mulch, is just adding organic layer onto your soil. And what it does many things, but the classic one that people think about is it suppresses weeds, but also it keeps moisture in. So we had such a dry summer last year. So, but you've got to put a good layer on. You've got to put about 3 inches. What's that in new money? 5 to 10 centimeters. You know, you need a good layer. And I like using a good soil conditioner. People use bark chips, but it's got to be well rotted. You know, got to be a good 6 months to a year. Farmyard manure, if you know where that source has come from. Mushroom compost, all sorts of different things. But if you've not got a ready supply, it can be quite expensive to be. People will end up buying bags of compost, which is kind of getting away from the whole point. A lot of companies do sell mulch, you know, soil conditioner, topsoil, bark, manure, but that can end up costing you. So, you know, you can look around for companies that sell big bulk bags. Not always easy to do. So actually buying a big bag of Phacelia seeds and sowing it as a green manure, you know, is going to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, much more cost effective way. Yeah, exactly. And actually the joy of it, I mean, I think green manures, they look so pretty. Yeah. You know, there's a red clover that looks wonderful, you know, vetch and rye. Yeah. They just look gorgeous. And Phacelia has those wonderful blue flowers. Beautiful. Yeah.
And great for wildlife as well. Yeah. You just got to stop it before it sets seed.
So we're carrying on our walk. We'll go around the edge of our lovely greenhouse. Why don't we go inside? So, yes, it's very warm in here. Yeah, it's a lovely traditional. We're very lucky with this was sort of
was it gifted?
Yeah, it was gifted to Garden Organic by Alitex. You know, probably a good 25 years ago, I would say.
Oh my gosh, it looks almost new, doesn't it?
We've grown all sorts of things in here. Malabar spinach, which goes all the way up. You know, we had loofahs in here 1 year. Absolutely fantastic. Kate, you're very passionate about ensuring that people learn how and people know how. And that's something we feel very, very strongly about at Garden Organic is... particularly that people should have the skills to be able to grow some of their own food. It feels like an essential life skill that isn't particularly taught along the way. And if you didn't have some kind of influence in your life that was perhaps a family member, then you're not actually going to be exposed to it. And you're never going to really know, first of all, where food comes from, and second of all, how to actually produce it yourself. It's a real unintended consequence, I would say, of our age. What are we doing about it?
Oh gosh, it's such a hard one, isn't it? Because it's such an essential kind of primordial skill, really, isn't it, to feed ourselves. But we've lost it in this kind of modern day of convenience. But along with that, we've lost the taste. We are eating vegetables and fruits that's covered in pesticides, whether we like it or not. Organic is seen as a luxury, and it really shouldn't. And even if you're just having a go at growing some salad rather than buying it from a chemical-laden bag for an extortionate amount of price, have a go. And I think one of the things I find with gardening is that people get they give up really quickly, whereas you learn any other skill. If you try and learn to be a potter, say, you've got the Great British Pottery Throwdown, you know, fabulous program, but you're not going to enter that competition having never thrown a pot before. So for some reason, we seem to think that as a gardening, we'll buy a packet of seeds and by summer, we're going to be eating all our own food. And I think there is this kind of image that we can all do it. It's something you have to learn and just have to work at a little bit. But I used to run a community teaching garden, and I still always remember just the faces of, and I had under four-year-olds coming, pulling out a carrot, and just that joy and just that surprise that this is actually what it looks like rather than cut up little batons from a McDonald's pack, you know, and just that absolute amazement and the joy that children get from digging up potatoes, you know, it's buried treasure, isn't it? So I think teach your children, make it fun, but you don't have to have a massive garden. I mean, I do love gardeners' world, but the problem is Monty Dunn has a massive garden. He also has people to help him behind the scenes. But he has a huge garden where he has massive compost bays. So it's so easy for him to grow all his own food. And he's been learning for years and years and years. We have to accept that it's a skill we need to learn. And I'm going to go back to, we need to be teaching this in schools. We need to be teaching people how to grow food, and not just the kids, the staff as well. I used to run my son's garden club. As soon as I left, nobody took it on. It should be in the curriculum, because growing your own food, and how the world is, everything is so insecure. If people can grow their own food, there's going to be less carbon. I mean, to me, it's an absolute no-brainer. I hate that phrase, but it is. Teach children, teach people to grow their own food. Let's have more allotments, more community gardens. If you're building new houses, then save a big patch to have a community garden where people can grow their own food. It's amazing. I mean, I was a late grower to food. And honestly, I've now got a small garden and it is more of a struggle. I'm on a waiting list for an allotment and I really miss it. But grow a cucumber from seed, because honestly, you'll never, ever buy a supermarket bought one again, because that difference in taste, and you know everything about that cucumber. But expect to fail, and that's okay. Just learn a bit, but have fun. Start with something simple. Tomatoes aren't that simple. Instagram will believe you to think it's really simple to grow loads and loads of tomatoes. Start with something easy. Start with salad, start with peas, something quite fun, something easy, but also something that you like to eat. Like this year, it's all about cabbages, evidently, on social media. Cabbages are really hard to grow, and you don't want too many of them either. So maybe just think about something simpler, and just have fun learning.
I think that's it. I mean, I think, you know, it is fun. It's serious as well. You know, we're talking about serious issues. But actually, if we can all have a little bit of agency, if you like, we can all have a little bit of our own power to, you know, to grow some of our own stuff. And it can actually be as simple as, you know, growing some herbs on a windowsill. You know, if you pick something to try and focus on, to perhaps try and be self-sufficient in one thing, that's the way forward, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And herbs is a really, really good way to start. And you can do things like buy a small pot from a supermarket, and then you can split it up into about 10 different plants, and you've got basil throughout the season, and you can pick the stems of that basil and root it in water, and you've got a forever supply, you know. And that's a really good way to get you hooked, something like a herb. That's a great, great, great suggestion.
I think it's really easy to think that gardening is perhaps a series of jobs. You know, I heard somebody describe gardening as outdoor housework, you know, and it's kind of, people feel guilty about their gardens, and, oh, they apologise. Oh, sorry, it's looking a bit of a mess. Or, you know, sorry, you know, you just missed these flowers, and, you know, and, oh, sorry, there's so many weeds. You know, we get very negative about it, don't we? Yeah. But actually, instead of thinking about it as jobs to do, you know, can we change that to think about it as, you know, moments of joy? I mean, you have been very involved in garden therapy as well, haven't you?
Absolutely. And yeah, so I worked at the Therapy Garden in Surrey, an amazing place for people with all sorts of issues, whether it's stroke, people who'd recently had a stroke, young adults with ADHD and autism. And actually, no dig didn't work there, because the best thing for some of these young lads was getting them to double dig a trench, and they absolutely loved it. So, I mean, you know, think of it as just time to be outside, getting fresh air, getting some sun, getting some exercise. And so what if it's a bit messy? It's all about the wild life now anyway, so that's all you need to say. I'm rewilding, so I shouldn't worry about that. For me, any excuse not to do housework will get me out in the garden. So I think just be kinder to yourself and just enjoy your garden. Have certain parts of it that it doesn't matter if it's a bit weedy, if it's a bit messy. It's better for wildlife anyway, so embrace that. For me, yes, there are jobs sometimes. You know, I think, oh no, I need to clean out all my pots. You know, to me, that's a bit more like housework. But then if I think about it, if I do that, my seeds and seedlings are going to be healthier. They stand more of a chance of surviving. So actually, it's a good thing that I'm doing. And I'm going to be, you know, rewarded by hopefully some beautiful flowers and some fantastic veg. So kind of look at it positive spin on it. You know, if you do a little job here, a little job there, don't, honestly, that first sunny Saturday, don't get out in the garden at 9 and come back in at 5, and then the next day you can't move because it'll put you off forever. Just do little bits and just create a little space where you can just sit. Doesn't matter how small your garden is, just sit, just listen. I mean, just hearing the birds. There's traffic, but those birds are just amazing. And that's kind of why I garden, for those little moments of joy, is what you said.
You gardened with lots of different groups of people, and you did a show garden some years ago at Hampton Court, which was with a group of army wives. Can you tell us how that came about?
Yes, well, they certainly don't sing. They kept wanting me to say that. So the community teaching garden that I ran, I was in Surrey near a place called Deep Cut, which became kind of infamous for some deaths of young soldiers. But it has a large barracks area. So you've got Purbright, Deep Cut, and it's also near Aldershot. And I was working in the garden, and a woman came up to me and said, "Oh, I really love gardening. I've recently moved to the area. I don't know anybody. Do you want to volunteer?" And she was amazing. And from that, she said, "Look, I know these other women who've recently moved in, and how about setting up, you know, some time for us?" So we did a little gardening course for them. And the main thing was, in those days, not that long ago, you'd move into an army house and each garden would be chain link fenced, and you weren't allowed to touch it. Or if you did, you had to put it all back to the way it was. So there was very little incentive to kind of garden. So I devised a course about growing in containers. So how to grow in a container. So I got them building containers. So a lot of these women had never held a saw or a drill, you know, a power tool before. So they really enjoyed that. And do you remember Linda Bellingham?
Yes.
So she was doing a TV series for ITV called A Taste of Britain. And she must have seen a little newspaper clip about our garden and the army wives, and her stepson was in the army. So she came and featured us, and she said to me, "Oh, it's like a movable feast." And that clicked, and we decided we were going to go and try and see if we'd get a small garden at Hampton Court. And we got accepted, and the council helped, and we got some sponsorship, and it was all about growing edible food in containers. And the BBC filmed us as well. I think helped that I knew a few people, but they loved the story. So it was army wives who, you know, started to learn how to grow everything they could eat in containers. So yeah, it was a super, super garden. It was quite stressful, but they all became friends. And in fact, one of my army wives now has worked at Beth Chatto Gardens full time for quite a long time. Another one did her RHS level 3 qualification with me together. So I like to think I had a bit of success. Another army wife has an allotment where she absolutely adores growing vegetables. So I think that's quite a nice legacy to have.
Very much so. And also, you know, just inspiring as well to think that actually somebody just stopped and started talking to you. And if we're not out in our gardens, then we're not going to be talking to people. We're not going to chance upon those opportunities. So that's another reason, isn't it, to get out and do stuff and chat to people as they're passing
by. Make connections.
Yeah.
Absolutely, make connections. And I must admit, that's one of the things I think Instagram's quite good at. It's enabled people to make connections, especially during lockdown when we couldn't get out and meet people. You know, working, there's a lot of kind of Instagram families that have developed who share loads of tips and helpful advice. And I think, you know, that's not a bad thing.
So what's next for you? Because it sounds like you go from one thing to the next. It's amazing.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm really trying to stay a bit more in one place, but it's not been easy this year. I live in South Devon now and I absolutely love it. And I kind of want a bit of a quieter life. So I'm trying to build up a consultancy where I kind of go to people's gardens and just kind of help them. I don't redesign. I'm not a garden designer. I did a diploma, but it doesn't suit me, and I can't draw or use CAD on a computer. But what I love to do is kind of say to people, you know, this is how to improve your soil. You know, you've got something here that's probably not going to last, or how to prune something. So really give people a bit of common sense and kind of sharing my knowledge so that they can make the best of their garden without having to kind of rip everything out and start again. That's kind of what I'd like to do. But at the moment, I'm also quite happy driving around the country, meeting people, chatting away. And obviously, I also do a lot about kind of pushing peat free, trying to stop people buying bagged peat.
And have you got any advice around that? Because, you know, the issue, especially this time of year when everybody's sowing their seeds, is that there's this sense that if it's peat-free, it's not good enough, which I know is total rubbish. But actually convincing people of that, because it's difficult. You know, you buy a bag of peat-free, perhaps it doesn't work, but it's not necessarily... you know, as simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, you say, unfortunately, there is some rubbish out there, and that's one of the problems. We were told there was going to be legislation, a ban on using peat in bag compost, and we're still waiting for that. And, you know, because that was going to happen, a lot of companies have spent millions investing in peat-free composts. And now what's happening is people are importing really cheap peat from abroad, namely the Baltics, and now Ireland again, I think. And so selling really cheap bags of peat. So it's really hard to compete. I think people just need to learn to garden a little bit differently. So the main thing is watering, is that peat-free will often look dry on the top, but it's actually really, really moist underneath. So check your watering. We've always been taught, you know, give everything a really good drench, give everything an amazing soak, you know, stand there and water, water, water. Actually now, it's a bit like painting the Fulse Road Bridge. You want to start at one end with your watering can, go and do all your other pots and then come back again. Don't do it all at once. Just do it little by little by little. And, you know, I, for one, not used to that. So it's changing your watering, getting to know your plants a bit more, and also feeding. I mean, I'm talking about growing in containers. That's the only place I think you should be using bagged compost anyway, is container growing, and they've got to rely on you for their feed. A lot of gardeners don't feed anyway. A lot of peat-free compost will come with feed, but it does tend to run out a bit more quickly, especially because it's quite high in potassium. And if you then add a plant food that's high in potassium, then you're going to have problems with uptaking the other nutrients. So feed a bit earlier than maybe the bags say. Buy a seed and cutting compost for sowing your seeds. I would absolutely recommend that. And try and get one that is more kind of coir based, or ideally not wood fibre based, because they can have a fungus gnat issue. I mean, there's no escaping that. So just check. Get a good brand. Share with other people if you're in a garden club, an allotment society. Try different brands. Have a go. Don't go for the cheapest. Don't go for that bog off offer in Aldi's, you know, or something like that. Just, you know, because you do get what you pay for. There's also a scheme called the RSS, the Responsible Sourcing Scheme. It's a bit like when you have a dishwasher and it has the kind of ratings up to A to E. It's very similar. If the rating is more green, then you know that's sustainably sourced compost, because you don't want to be replacing one problem with another. So always check and talk to the brands. You know, if you're not happy, talk to them. But I would always as well, you know, what people do this time of year, a lot of garden centres are trying to shift old stock.
Yes.
So if you go into the garden centre, you get the bag that's been at the bottom of the pallet all year. You don't want to buy that. Ask for fresh. Always buy from the top if you can, and try and make sure it's fresh. If it feels really heavy, that means it's going to be saturated with water and it's not going to be good for your plants at all. So don't buy the heaviest wet bag, and just be careful of offers. Just ask. Don't be afraid of asking at your garden centre as well. You know, people will pay £35 for a lovely David Austin rose and maybe another £30 for a beautiful pot, and then go and buy the cheapest compost. You know, that compost is the foundation for your plant to grow in. So don't blame the compost for when your plants don't do well. So think about that. You know, you're going to pay £60 for a plant and pot, pay a little bit more for a good compost.
Comes back to the soil again.
Always. It's the foundation of life, you know. So buy good compost. Feed, I mean, I know obviously, well, I presume you use your comfrey to feed your plants, but we can't all grow comfrey. If you can, I always recommend an organic seaweed. I think that's a great feed. But, you know, you're growing in a container, it's not going to upset the soil microbe in your garden. So use whatever feed you like to use, whether it's a granular or a liquid, and just keep an eye on your plants. But it's get that watering right. That's the main thing. And get to know your plants again. Now, what's not to love?
Thanks so much to Kate Turner for joining me on the Organic Gardening Podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please recommend us to a friend or leave us a review on your preferred podcast app. We're trialling more regular uploads for the Organic Gardening Podcast, and we would love to know what you think. Please get in touch via email. That's podcast@gardenorganic.org.uk. Or you can find us at Garden Organic UK on Facebook and Instagram to send in your feedback. Our Growers Against Glyphosate campaign is still live. We've got over 4,000 signatures, but we've still got a way to go until we hit our next milestone. You can sign the petition and write to your MP by visiting our website, gardenorganic.org.uk/growers against glyphosate. All that's left for me to do now is to thank Kevin McLeod for the music, and we'll see you next time.